welcome to SharePoint at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME Roundtable. Hi, I'm Sherry Bettine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. Today, I'm here with many of our IT experts from the SharePoint group that run and support SharePoint here at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. We want to learn a little bit about you also, so we've posted a question in your Q&A window that we'd love to hear the answer to. And as you answer that question, we'll see the results on the monitor in front of us, and that'll help shape how we answer your questions. The question is, how much of your SharePoint infrastructure is on-prem versus in the cloud? I would like to start off by asking our experts to introduce themselves. And we'll start with you, Darren.
Hi, I'm Darren Moffitt. I'm a service engineer here at Microsoft. I focus mostly on Office 365, licensing, automation, and SharePoint Online.
My name is Jared Shockley. I'm a service engineer that is helping transition Microsoft IT from on-prem to cloud services such as Office 365, Dynamics 365, and Azure.
Hi, I'm David Johnson. I am a program manager who has been working on architecture, strategy, and solutions for how we help our customers build and help a SharePoint and 365 overall internally.
Hi, I'm Sam Crutzen. I'm a program manager here in MSIT. My focus today is on enterprise search, Delve, as well as some of the new publishing functionality coming to the SharePoint space.
Now is the time for you to be posting your questions in our live Q&A window. And we want to add one more thing. We would love to hear your feedback on SharePoint and Office 365. We have a direct line to the product group, and we will deliver your feedback to the product group. And so bring it on. I'll be asking the questions, but the feedback we'll just capture quietly behind the scenes. And we also want to get through all of your questions in the next hour. However, if we don't, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue answering your questions and post the extended footage along with this video on our site at microsoft.com/ITShowcase. So we'll get started with our first question. How is MSIT, Microsoft IT, working with users to adopt the new modern team sites and pages?
That's a good question. We actually default to those now. If you go ahead and provision a site internally at Microsoft, we give you now a default modern site. In fact, we give you a default modern group with all of the 365 group capabilities, including the modern team site. We still enable the provisioning of what I call classic team sites, where you can use and choose whether you want the modern UI or the classic UI. But that said, anything net new is default modern groups. And what we're doing for a conversion perspective is basically if you've got a customized site where you have heavy customizations in place, you can stick to the classic UI and use that. But for teams that are using SharePoint pretty much out of a box, they'll get the modern UI. Anyone want to add?
That's pretty much.
Works, yeah.
Yeah.
Way to nail that one.
And many of our teams love putting new technology through its paces. So
yeah, that's true too.
Many of our internal teams have created team sites just for that, to start collaborating online.
Well, exactly. And I think a key point that people get surprised about sometimes when I talk about is the fact we offer self-service creation. So anybody in the company can get a new team site for now group for your project purposes. I've got a new project, new team, new org. Great. We'll get you a new site if that's what you want.
We did have the question on, if we already had a team SharePoint and we set up a new team site, mm-hmm. Do we have to rebuild everything?
The notion, there's two parts to that question. Going to a modern SharePoint UI, you can do directly in your existing site. The thing is, switching the default libraries for the modern list libraries and document libraries, there is a switch the site collection owner can make or list owners can make. To switch what UI they want. That said, there's a difference in terms of appearances, of course, for obvious reasons, as well as if you've customized the legacy experience, you may not want to. And at that point, that's where you want to potentially do some rework to adjust. To move to a group, that does require going to create a new site, because there's no notion today of taking a legacy team site and associating it to a group. That said, you can always create a group elsewhere and just use it as a security group to secure your SharePoint site too.
Okay. I would just add on a little bit. You know, you mentioned, David, about how the site collection owner can, you know, update to the new modern sites. Mm-hmm. I would add that there are tenant level controls. So for, you know, our other IT friends out there, our colleagues, you know, there are ways you can control that, so you can, you know, have some change control and roll that out in a way that makes sense for you.
Yeah.
You know, both at a tenant level and at a site collection level.
Okay, very good. I heard at Ignite that sometime early 2017, SharePoint sites should be accessible in the OneDrive app in the Finder on Macs. We have users who say the web UI is too slow. Do you know when and if this will be available?
I think that's the modern sync client on both Windows and Mac.
Modern sync client, maybe this, the SharePoint
synchronizing
app,
the document libraries. Oh, the SharePoint app, yeah.
Could be.
Because the SharePoint app itself is now released in the various stores for all the for iOS, Android, and Windows. I don't know specifically about the for OneNote app, though.
Well, this is OneDrive on Mac.
OneDrive.
Yeah.
So this, it sounds like the sync client.
Yeah, it's the sync client.
I don't know if we have any updated dates past early 2017 for the sync client release.
Now, I'll also mention, if the question was about performance of the web client in general, which I think was the second half of that question, yeah, that's a major area of focus for the SharePoint product group. They've made major investments. We have the notion, am I allowed to talk about the, well, I'm already talking about it, so hopefully I don't get in trouble. We have the notion of a CDN coming in the SharePoint space,
yep,
which will improve performance of, mm-hmm, of SharePoint all up. Mm-hmm. You'll have the ability to, you know, define a public or a private, and in the case of public, this is public for all users. You can use, you know, the same one that other Office 365 enterprises use.
Yeah, and they didn't announce a CDN at Ignite as well.
And
as
CDN,
they did announce
is
it. Okay, good.
CDN is specifically for a content distribution network, so that basically your assets from a SharePoint site can be hosted on a kind of geo-distributed cache environment, so that your files are closer to your user and are going to come be delivered faster.
Okay.
So major work in the performance space coming.
Yeah.
What was your approach when you, Microsoft IT, was changing its services with the various new tools? Did you review the RACI at the team?
I'll take a stab at that one. So we in Microsoft IT are a little bit different than a lot of IT organizations that I've talked to in my experiences. So, one of our primary missions is what we call internally dogfooding. You know, one of our missions is to run bits early, run bits, get them refined and built correctly before we release them. And what that means is we have some unique challenges around release. Sometimes we run things before they're ready. Some things we run things that aren't quite done or feature complete. And so I don't know if we have a good answer to that question. I'll stop there to see if anyone else.
Yeah, I think feature rollouts, so it depends on the default state of a feature and product. Obviously, there are certain things that as a tenant admin you can turn on or off, and it becomes a conversation as to, are there any risks with us turning this on? What are the implications of us turning a given service on? We will do those reviews. If it turns out to be a default capability, they're simply adding in. That is something that, of course, we want to see what the default impact is to us as well as a company. So we'll let that default roll through. It is more of those optional things, like, for example, new service being rolled out that we can turn on the tenancy or not. We can flip a switch to enable a different type of sharing model, for example, or not. Those are all things where we'll do the analysis, and we'll go just like anybody. We do our own security reviews. We say, how comfortable are we with this? What is the IT manageability of this? We've got a huge tenancy. I mean, the amount of content we have, for example, OneDrive for Business is enormous. We've got one petabyte of content now just in OneDrive for Business internally alone.
Exactly.
It's just massive, and so we do have things to think about that many customers don't have to deal with in terms of size, scale, and issues. And so we do think about these things, but it really isn't, I'd say, a fixed thing. As Sam said, it depends on the feature of what we're talking about.
Right.
How do you evangelize team sites technology?
How do we evangelize team sites?
I think, I'll take a quick stab. Part of it is, as we've rolled out groups, That has been one of the biggest changes for a lot of teams, is utilizing groups, which includes a whole bunch of technologies together. Yeah. With the group conversation, that's replacing the distribution group, the classic distribution group in Exchange. We have the team site that comes with it now. It has a OneDrive for Business team folder that replaces the old doc libraries. By people jumping in and trying that, they're finding, oh, this is working better for me than old team sites or old distribution groups. And so it's actually just getting people to try it. And here at Microsoft, we tend to open up, as David was saying, we have the capability for anyone to try any of these new technologies in Office 365 and find what works for them. And a lot of groups jump in and they say, oh, this actually works better for us. And then we have the governance of shutting off their old team sites after they move all their data over.
Well, and another big part of this is simply from an IT controls perspective, there's massive value in our employees keeping content in a SharePoint team site, whether it be a legacy, a classic team site that's not group connected, or a modern team site that is group connected. Either way, the content is managed by all the IT controls on top of 365, everything from DLP, e-discovery, retention policies. You know, the list goes on and on about the controls that therefore IT has. We would far rather you as an employee get content off your individual machine. Then we don't have to worry about the individual machine. We don't have to worry about the files. The files are now protected on our service. We want them on our service as opposed to doing other things with them. So I think to answer the question from a different perspective, it's the education of what not to use. Don't use these other things. Don't use consumer offerings. Don't use, like, if you're sharing, if you're co-authoring a document, put it on a SharePoint team site or a group and do a co-authoring, do a share request to share of a document, co-author there, as opposed to emailing attachments back and forth, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's the education we want to do because, A, it helps simplify and improve and speed along that collaboration process, as well as make sure that from an IT perspective, we can be comfortable that we know where the content lives.
Yep. I will add to that we do have an arm of our team that does awareness and drives adoption. So we put out a lot of communication to our employees, telling them what great features are coming with Teams to encourage that to be that evangelist and to encourage the adoption, along with
point.
What Jared and David added in.
Yeah, we do have a lot of white papers that we produce internally.
We call them internally Work Smart Guides, but they're productivity guides to our customers. And we provide these same guides to you on our IT Showcase site on Microsoft.com. So I'll put the plug in for that.
Definitely.
So we welcome our customers to use our same materials to drive adoption within their organizations.
And in fact, that's a great area of opportunity for feedback, that as you're providing feedback, if you see an area that we don't have content in IT Showcase for that you believe that we're talking about internally that we do, we're happy to hear that as well.
Yes. How has governance changed with the availability of groups and modern sites?
I guess that's my question then. So, group governance, this has been a topic I've been working on for many years. As an enterprise, we've had historically had, the team site, SharePoint, lifecycle governance, highly custom solution to make that work on top of the product. Groups makes this better for us because groups, the notion that we've always had internally for many, many years is a notion of classify. We want our employees to tell us the security sensitivity of the data that they're going to be working with within that group. Is this a top secret project effectively, what we call high business impact? And we want them to classify the container of a SharePoint site or now the group as to what kind of content this thing should hold. So that's the first thing, that groups in 365 now supports the ability to configure the Active Directory in cloud to say, I want to collect classification, and here's my classification schema. And then with that, the workloads, like, for example, SharePoint and now Microsoft Teams and OA will collect classification, let you then use that for other purposes for policy enforcement down the line. And as well, while lifecycle management isn't there today for groups, that is something that the product did announce at Ignite, that lifecycle management is coming for groups in the next quarter.
Okay. As a public agency, we have to monitor sites for compliance. How does self-service site collection with group creation add to the complexity of monitoring, security policies, and records retention?
I can kick that one off. It hasn't thrown too much of a monkey wrench into what we do, because of course eDiscovery and DLP work kind of on a unified process across Exchange, OneDrive, and SharePoint. And because the Office groups and Microsoft Teams are all on a SharePoint backend, more or less, the current eDiscovery and DLP processes and security policies that we use today do, in fact, carry over to those. So we haven't...
And DLP is?
Data loss prevention, or data loss protection, depending on, you know...
Your view of it.
GIF, GIF, you know, it's one of those debates that I'll forever rage on. Yeah, so because we have those things in place and we've kind of established that during the SharePoint era, a lot of that work is carrying over. So I think David and I have had discussions about some of the very specific stuff that pertains to things like Office groups and Teams. Mm-hmm. And that's a story that's still consistently evolving as the feature sets continue to roll out and mature. So we're still continuing to kind of write that book, so to speak.
Is it more complex or less today?
I would say... less complex. When on-prem I had to do forensics audits and security audits, it was a lot of dealing with ULS logs. There was a lot less tooling. It was basically working with raw data and having to come up with my own tool sets to kind of find that stuff.
And using third-party products.
Exactly.
Like, for example, RSA for things like DLP.
Yeah. Yep. Nowadays, with the Unified Compliance Center, for the quick one-offs, there's enough tooling there, and even in PowerShell with Search Unified Audit Logs, that I can actually find most of this stuff within 5-10 minutes. It doesn't feel as much of a chore, and I'm not having to sit there and dive through terabytes of ULS logs. So it is less complex from that. The eDiscovery piece, from what I've heard from our lawyers, it's much easier now with the eDiscovery portal and the improvements that they've made there, and a lot of the new search functionality that has definitely benefited quicker eDiscovery and case management. So, yeah, it's been less complex, at least in the SharePoint Online O365 space.
And to address the retention thing, you can apply retention policies and tags to the service and say, hey, if people are tagging content with this retention tag, I want this to be put on hold for this period of time, for example. So those additional things can happen in addition to the tools Darren was talking about, for example, DLP. DLP can, again, scan for patterns. Like, hey, I want to look for any instances where someone puts in a secret code word in or a credit card number pattern. And I want to find that stuff across a tendency. So from a security and preservation perspective, those are definitely things we have to care about too. And we absolutely do partner with our corporate security team as well as our legal partners around those two things. But the services are in place to help them with that.
Okay. Very good. How is Microsoft IT managing the environments for Power Apps and Flow?
Ooh.
Jared or Sam? Or both?
Both. I'm from a actual managing the environments, we've just enabled those environments.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of governance around it per se. Mm-hmm. And business teams are taking advantage of that. They're starting to utilize it. I know for a lot of folks, Workflow Manager has been a good system for them over the years. But as a IT pro, and I think Darren can also
I know where this is going. I know where this is going.
I have an error. Here's a correlation ID. Can you look it up?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. That's not something that is very easily done, and especially when you're talking with Office 365 and SharePoint Online.
Yeah, specifically Office 365.
Exactly.
Looking up correlation IDs as a customer was not an easy endeavor.
It's not easy.
If at all possible, it was a lot of ticket work for.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so moving to Flow, you now have a robust system that can connect not only to Office 365 but all sorts of SaaS services outside of Microsoft, and utilize a very easy to use framework that not only can work great for a business user, but then can be expanded on then into Azure Logic Apps, into a more customizable IT solution. So it's a great opportunity for businesses to move off a Workflow Manager and be able to get a better product in the end. However, if you're still on-prem, you're gonna have to use the, there's a unified power gateway, if you will, that is set up for Power Apps, Power BI, and Flow. To be able to connect to on-prem systems, but it's still possible.
So, and I think I actually heard a different question in that question, so I'll address that one too, and I think between us maybe we'll cover the whole thing. I think the question I heard is, how are we managing the user's ability to use those products? So for us, you know, the Microsoft way, has been we've lit it up for everyone, and we're watching to see what happens. The product group doesn't have a whole lot of governance controls yet, although they've committed to doing that, you know, giving IT departments ways to control, you know, what endpoints they use and whatnot. So those are things that are on the roadmap, but during this preview time frame, we've just lit it up, and every user at Microsoft can make use of Power Apps, Flow, and those are the release parts of that.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that they're introducing now is the ability to have workspaces in Power Apps, so I can also create my own, like, here's an HR space, for example, and here's the LVOps for HR. And
correct.
So we can therefore start to delegate and say, you know what, the apps in here are only allowed to come from this org, for example. And so I think the interesting thing about this is we will be able to do governance. It's just to your point, we're not there yet. We're in the introductory stage before governance, really. Now we're looking at it and going, okay, now as we grow, we're going to want to segregate these parts of a catalog and have these parts managed by this division, for example, part of a company, right?
Exactly, yeah. This is a case sort of I referenced earlier of where the product group has released something that may not be feature complete from an IT perspective, but it's very important for them to get it out early so they can get some feedback so that when they do release, it has all the functionality that's needed. So I think it's...
And I'd say that to that point, the IT controls we've seen there are coming in many cases too.
They're definitely coming.
So. Yeah.
And one of the great things that I've found with both Flow and Power Apps is the context of how those systems work is based on the person who's designed it. So if you have row level security on some sort of SharePoint list, it's dependent on which account was entered to have that Flow run as to what it can see. So it's actually messed up a few teams that I've talked with where they're, how do I get this to work with all the rows? And, oh, you have to have it as one of the administrators, not one of the users. So the great thing, it's like Delph. It's using the security context of who's running it. It's not just using a high-level full admin that can access anything and could potentially be a backdoor into data.
Okay, very good. Do you have a team that educates the rest of Microsoft to use all of the new tools? How do you handle adoption? Well, I'll take that question.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Since we are the IT Showcase team, we do have a portion of that team that is all about adoption of the new operating systems, the new tools that come out, that build adoption kits that help get the word out across Microsoft about the new great new tools that they have available to them. They build our productivity guides. We also have teams that don't have as much of a broad adoption that do their own. And this one team that does our productivity guides and our adoption builds a self-service model to help the teams that do their own adoption planning, evangelism, to do it in the right way, in a way that gets the biggest impact across Microsoft. We do share a lot of what we do with you, our customers, and you can find that on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase.
One thing I would add is certainly in the SharePoint 365 space, we also have an internal user group, just like there are user groups of SharePoint in the community. We have a community user group as well internally where people that are consider themselves power users or portal owners kind of get together on a monthly basis and basically knowledge share, and we present what's coming out and what's going on in that community as well, in addition to everything you're talking about. So just to kind of build that community aspect of this is useful for especially for kind of the power user community.
Yeah. Do you still also have on-premises SharePoint?
Yes, we do. next question. we do. We have a 2016 farm. We have a few 2013 farms. One of the challenges that we are currently trying to work through is the lack of geolocation or geo-awareness? Geo-tenancy, yeah. So the geographical locations have been an issue for us. So we do have farms in Dublin and EMEA specifically. To help service our employees there that specifically complain that, you know, connections to Redmond may not necessarily facilitate what they're trying to accomplish. So our goal, though, is once we have geo-tenancies lit up and available, that we will deprecate those two 2013 farms in EMEA and Asia. Although, to be fair, while they are on-prem, we are currently working to migrate them to Azure. Mm-hmm. This guy right here has been helping us with that effort. So while we are currently keeping them in data centers that we would consider on-prem traditionally, we are trying to move them to Azure VMs, at least for the existing longevity of those farms.
Yeah, we'd be hosting them on IaaS services to try and help alleviate our, we're trying, as a Microsoft IT, we're trying to get to 95% of our systems in the cloud and 5% on-prem. And SharePoint, even though we have a fairly big SharePoint load, the farms that we have, they're within the load sizing that we could put them onto IaaS VMs, and Darren and I are working actively on that with our teams.
Yep.
Are we implemented?
We're implementing it shortly.
Okay.
Another point that I want to call out is this is where hybrid fits in, that as an enterprise, we clearly believe that we have to provide core services for our employees irrespective of where the site sits. So I should be able to find content across on-prem and cloud. I should be able to have taxonomy services for prem and cloud and consistency across all this. So part of what we do is we're doing this for all the reasons Darren said, but even once we have, for example, the ability to have a cross-geo tenancy in the cloud, we'll still have on-prem, partially because, you know, as Microsoft, we want to prove out the viability of hybrid. We want to prove out the viability, what issues are going to exist with having a complex solution like that, where you do have on-prem farms, and what that's going to mean to us as a company, or to any of our customers. So we appreciate that, and we wouldn't run like that. But to Darren's point, cross-geo is probably the single biggest reason why we have on-prem today. There are a couple other workloads we have as well that are remaining on-prem, but for the most part, it's things that are just not quite, you know, highly customized environments that will just take time, the longest period of time to get to cloud, or, you know, the specific business reason why it's left behind.
Mm-hmm. And simply from a storage perspective, raw storage consume perspective, almost everything's in the cloud these days.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 97-98%.
So exactly.
Vast majority is in the cloud, and what remains is very special use case and for validation of on-prem scenarios.
And to Jared's point, even the things that when we say on-prem, it's on-prem from a machine and SharePoint perspective, but it's in the cloud from an Azure perspective.
Yeah, it's Azure servers, Azure VMs running SharePoint and SQL in Azure.
Yeah. As opposed to running on Office 365.
Correct.
What is the plan for publishing sites using publishing infrastructure within the new modern experience?
Yeah, it's a new publisher.
How much?
Yeah, that's a good question. How much have we talked about publicly? So, they talked at the SharePoint conference for Modern News, the team news that's happening.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, the Modern News. They've talked about. They've referenced SPFX. You know, the new foundation on which all of our solutions are going to be built going forward. And you're starting to see that roll out across first release tenants now, I think. I know it's internal, but I think first release as well.
Yeah, and what that'll mean is the ability for a team to be able to share a simple publishing page out in a modern UI in a very simple way. I mean, I can quickly have someone build a page out, and we demonstrated before that you can take like our corporate portal and build a whole section of it out in like half the time you could have done with legacy. But, and that's with modern news, modern pages, from the perspective of simple team sharing, team knowledge sharing. You can assume the product is working on what the next steps are from that. I don't know how public they've announced on what portal's going.
Yeah, we've
got
to walk the line on that one. What I will mention, though, is a lot of the current investments. Number one, we had a performance question earlier. Because you know the model going forward is for what we call internally anyway, client-side web parts, you know, web parts that are instantiated in the browser rather than on server side. You know, that has performance implications as the server doesn't have to do all that work and there's less stuff to be sent across the wire. So that's one aspect. And then the other aspect that I'm very excited about as a longtime Microsoftie is to see our embrace of non-Microsoft stack tools. So, you know, the idea that you can use React, for example, to customize, that you can use Visual Studio code instead of having to get a full Visual Studio or use SharePoint Designer. You know, the fact that you can build in robust and exciting ways like that, that really gives me a lot of optimism for the future of publishing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more to come.
Yeah.
Okay. With what has been stated, are the current classic SharePoint sites going the way of the dodo and going to be just Microsoft Teams sites instead? If so, there are concerns/shortcomings I have noticed of Microsoft Teams. They don't have the ability to consume from the content type hub. Is this coming? If not, how are we going to create and contain information architecture? This is a threatening, spiraling information sprawl.
Okay, so we can tackle this one, because I think a couple things to consider here is, first of all, there's I think we're kind of intermixing terms here, because Microsoft Teams is the new product UI with the kind of a chat-based interface, chat-based collaboration, created a team environment to kind of bring things together, including the overlay, its overlay on SharePoint files. Now, that doesn't in no way changes the notion of what you can do on the SharePoint site. Whether it's SharePoint Classic, as I've been calling it, or the modern SharePoint UI, you, in both cases, the content type hub is still behind the scenes for those things. I can specify the content type. I can still use the corporate taxonomy services to enforce what tagging must be in place, irrespective of modern or classic. That's all there. In fact, the modern SharePoint UI exposes the ability to show tags and write on the kind of the right rail much far easier. I can just click on the document and see the right rail with an ability to edit tags right there in process. So they're trying to simplify and bring up the tagging model, but it's definitely there as part of this. Now, how Microsoft Teams will work with this, like if I go create a new Microsoft Teams group, which effectively at the end underneath is an Office 365 group, which includes a SharePoint site, I can then, on the SharePoint layer, I can still provide and say, look, I want to apply these content types. Now, I'm not sure how Microsoft Teams, the UI, deals with showing and surfacing data that requiring content type ads, for example. But that said, the modern UI in SharePoint totally does.
And I think the add-on, too, I heard a little bit different take on the question that I'll address, and hopefully it's also useful, is number one, the modern team site, as it's been rolled out, it's not done. The product group knows it. There are aspects that they know are needed before they can, go anywhere near deprecating the old classic team site model. For example, web part zones and the ability to have more than one column. There's a long list of things that they know that they need to deliver to have the modern team site be on par or better in every major way. So if the concern and the question there was, I heard early, when does the classic team site go away? There's been no timeline. There's been no talk. I don't even know if the product group has any dates in mind for that. So if you need features and functionality that are still available only in the classic team site, rest assured that those will continue to be available for for at least the near to foreseeable future. We don't know dates, but long time.
And I would add that if there are capabilities that you believe are lacking in the modern SharePoint UI, the modern document libraries, modern lists, that's exactly the right feedback that needs to get for product team as well, because in many cases there's feedback we provided and I know customers have provided, and they're aware of that too. And don't get anyone wrong, but this whole notion that a modern team site is not about in any way about to replace a classic team site for all intents and purposes, for every purpose scenario. And all the core scenarios and capabilities SharePoint provides carry forward to modern.
Just in closing, I'd say this is not your old Microsoft. Just because we've released it doesn't mean we're done with it. This is something that, at least like in the modern lists, modern libraries experiences, we've seen new features, new fixes every month. Since it got released, so this is something that they continue to work on. We'll see the gap get closed consistently.
Yeah. This is modern engineering at its best. It's iterative, and they're changing it on a constant basis and taking feedback as a part of that to drive the better product.
It's not a three-year release cycle like the old days.
Exactly.
Currently, I can only see the new doc library experience by clicking into the doc library. We have many users who put the doc libs on their main pages, the first page that the users see, and they never click into the library. Is there a way to show the new doc libraries on the main page as a web part?
I actually noticed that myself. When you put the document library as a web part on the front page, sometimes it's because of the way the modern user interface works, a lot of employees can't necessarily tell that it's not actually the document library, it's simply a web part. If it's the only web part on the front page, then when you're clicking, you're like, where's the ribbon? Why can't I sync it? Why is the sharing a little weird? The toolbar there's no parity there between that. And I think that actually might be good feedback, more feedback. I don't think there's an easy way to work around that right now. I think when you add the web part, there's no way to get that full fat experience that you get when you go directly into the document at the moment. So I think that might be a good takeaway.
Yeah. There's a new part too that will, it's essentially a content by search web part light, for lack of a better word, that you can drop on the page, which will show content from the content library, and it favors content that has changed more recently.
Yeah,
but in terms of that full list.
Well, so for instance, I'll give you a scenario. If you want to move a file into a folder, you usually click the drop down and you would hit move file and move to. That type of functionality, like, why is it missing on the web part at the front page? Why is some of this functionality missing? I know exactly what that question's talking about. And you don't realize, oh, silly me, I'm in the web part on the front page. I'm not actually in the document library. So there's certain file manipulation structures that are missing in the web part that are present when you go directly to the library. But because of the direction we're going with the design language, it can be very confusing for users that are, they don't know they're on the front page. I completely emphasize with that. And I think that is good feedback.
Well, I think also, if you take a look at modern groups, the modern group front page is also different from the classic team site, even if it's using a modern library front page to that point. And I think this is, again, as you say, good feedback back to product.
Oh, absolutely.
And we have a way to provide feedback in our session, don't we?
Yes.
Exactly.
So we'll take that. And I'm sure Darren's been giving his. So this adds to it.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's great when our customers have feedback like that. So then it's Darren talking crazy. This is a Microsoft IT problem, not a customer problem. And in this case, it's clearly a customer problem.
You're
also
talking crazy.
And I'm also talking crazy. I don't want to downplay that.
Okay. How and when will we be able to utilize the SharePoint framework within the Microsoft SharePoint Online environment? Do we know that?
What was announced at Ignite, and I gotta keep going to go back to that because that was our last big public announcement wave, they were rolling out in this quarter, and you can probably assume beginning of next quarter. Not sure exactly what the schedule is publicly on that, but that's what we announced at Ignite.
The last timeline on that I saw, of course it rolls out to us first, and then it rolls out to customers who have configured their tenant for first release for all users. Then the next circle is people who have, customers who have configured first release for a subset of users. And then finally to, non-first release customers. So if you want to get it sooner rather than later, move yourself up that stack in the first release rings.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because I think it's actually been released to some first release customers.
Yeah, I think so. And you can get a preview tenancy. There's documentation on dev.office.com and the SharePoint for SharePoint patterns and practices on how to set up a dev tenancy to start working with it now.
Mm-hmm. Any plans to allow sharing of folders without requiring sign-in in SharePoint and
anonymous folders.
OneDrive for Business?
I'm assuming that's anonymous folders.
Correct.
As opposed to anonymous file sharing. So I'm not sure what we've announced on that one, so I'm not sure how to answer that one. But
let me finish the comment.
Sure. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I can share 5 files in a folder separately without requiring sign-in. Why can't I just share the whole folder without requiring sign-in?
Yeah.
I would like to have the option.
Yeah. I think we'll put it this way. The product group knows that is a requirement, and I'm not sure what we've committed to, but that is a very well-known one. And
good feedback,
and
too,
good feedback
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Keep hitting them with.
And,
so
yeah.
We'll take that to the product team.
One can assume that that's very, it's clear and probably something they're well aware of.
It's also something that I know probably risk management teams in IT are, no, we don't want this.
This is a hard scenario for us. That's exactly right, Jared, because on the one hand, there's perfectly reasonable scenarios where I would rather you share a file anonymously from our service then you're going to use some consumer offering, and therefore I lose the ability for IT to control. On the flip side, as IT, we, including us, we get paranoid about anonymous sharing of our assets as an enterprise. And we look closely at what that means. So quite honestly, this is one of those areas we haven't turned on yet on our own tenancy. Mm-hmm. So even when the product does flip the switch, which is why we can't talk to this as well as maybe we'd like, the fact is we're not going to turn it on day one. We're going to do pilots and evaluate. whatever risks of turning anonymous on in certain areas, and how do we control it, and do we feel we have those controls? Because like many of you, as an enterprise, you want to manage your content and make sure you're protecting it appropriately. Anonymous is a great way to do that when it comes to, I'd rather the content be here versus somewhere else. But again, you just have to get over that, do I have the controls in place?
And the feedback I would give there, too, is whether this or just individual file sharing with external users. One thing that you can be doing internally is to start discovering where the seams are in your organization. So one major product organization that everyone, the name of which everyone would know, is absolutely convinced that sharing with anybody is the right thing, and they're pressing us very hard to do so. Another major organization of name is convinced that we are way too open, and we share too much, and we don't have enough control and restriction. And so working with those two different teams, we're getting some great feedback on what kinds of controls that they would require in the product for certain types of file sharing.
Yeah, exactly.
And we probably land on the best possible solution by having those two opposite positions. Debated.
Yeah. When we're not being bludgeoned about the head and face.
By both groups.
Right. As IT, we get caught in the middle of, are we turning this enterprise capability on or not?
Yeah.
It's a game of tug of war, and we're the rope sometimes.
Yeah. That's a great analogy. Would you say that a migration took place from the on-premises to the online version, or was it more of a redesigning the whole way the organization works with content management?
That's a multi-part question.
New governance architecture.
I think the top level answer would be yes. Yes, a migration did take place.
Yes.
We did a great migration, Wagons East, and basically took a lot of the content en masse over months and moved it up to SPO. It was a large migration in that regard, and from our Redmond farm specifically. Haven't quite got there yet for previous reasons with geotenancy with EMEA and Asia, but yeah, there was a lot of content. I mean, we were talking 36 plus terabytes, give or take.
And then we've also not only did that, but we had the heavily customized portals that we had to actually go back and rethink.
That was a redesign, yes.
Total redesign of the large, like the intranet portals. Right. And then there were some aspects, like my site, we just left it behind. We totally deprecated it and said, it's not moving to the cloud, go get your files off of the employee's personal my site.
That's where we started with what we call the self-service. In fact, self-service is really critical for both OneDrive for Business, my sites, where we did not move. We actually did a major campaign where we said, this is going away on this date. The site, we flipped the switch. We put a big UI on top of the old My Sites, and we said, you've got until this period of time to move your content by yourself to your OneDrive for Business. Here's how. And so we told our employees to do that. We want to put it in their power. Also, we flipped the switch for all the defaults. But all new team sites, all new one, we're all provisioned exclusively in cloud. Exactly. So in fact, if I were to give anyone guidance on migration, start by opening the defaults. Start with net new, because what we found, especially internally, is by having strong lifecycle management on the internal environment, which we had, and all the defaults now going for net new to cloud, waiting a year after we flipped the defaults meant that 50% of our on-prem environment was already deprecated without IT having to actually do any migrations. After that, now we do the migrations. Now we get into what Darren was talking about, of we're going to actually now migrate all this terabytes of content that we know we still needed. And in parallel, we're going to do the portals themselves. But opening the defaults means no migration. Because the thing I like to talk about, the best migration is not to migrate. It's just to let your employees start with net new.
And when it comes to those heavily customized portals, I mean, sitting down and working with the teams to rethink, especially our main MS Web was a great. I know we have it on the IT showcase how we've migrated MS Web. It was one of the heavily customized SharePoint sites running on a lot of servers, its own farm. And when we moved it to the cloud, we actually made it a very generic SharePoint site with only 4 customizations. Which we went from 44 server-side customizations to 4 customizations. 2 are SharePoint hosted and 2 are provider hosted on Azure. That's an incredible story of change. And we also helped change the business process to adopt standard publishing out of the box. A lot of those customizations was our specialized publishing system. We showed, I think the team sat down with them and said, well, if you just change this one business process, you can use the out of the box and save this much money. And they were like, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do that.
There's another, and to add to that, there's another aspect of this as well. When you're moving, especially portals to the cloud, understand and decide on your device reach story. That for us, the mobile story became critical. That we knew our employees were going to start using tablets and phones and all the rest of it to access our internet. Our internet was no longer just about PCs and laptops. So therefore, doing the re-envisioning of a portal to make sure it was going to have a design that was going to work well on all these devices was part of that critical move to cloud redesign aspect, certainly for portals. Mm-hmm. Not so much for team size, because we tried to put that out of a box, but for portals is where we did the work to say, you know what, this portal, like our corporate portal, we're going to do the responsive nature of this and make it work wherever on any device.
Okay. What is typically the percentage of early adopters in the organization for new features?
Ooh, good question.
That's a tricky one, because sometimes tracking early adoption with some of our early releases can be a little bit difficult, mostly because the reporting features aren't necessarily the first ones there.
And every employee has the option to download.
Yeah, we've got a couple different tiers of adoption. So we've got the Microsoft Elite program, which is an internal program where people who want to be subjected to the, we'll say, wonders of very, very early software releases can do so. And I believe that group was around 5,000 users, give or take. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in reflection of what our company stands, I mean, that's 3-4% of the company right now that does early adoption. When it comes to other features, I mean, because we are a culture growth mindset, trying to tear things apart and learn from it, and we want to get involved with testing our products and eating our own dog food, our early adoption gets very aggressive. I know Sam and Dave, you guys might actually have some numbers for or some examples of where we captured numbers on early adoption, but I know we're very aggressive.
And it's product by product.
Yeah.
You may have as a person may be an early adopter on SharePoint, but not on another product.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's very pick and choose. I mean, we noticed with the Elite programs that Office is a very popular one. Windows tends to be second, although people even internally get a little bit squeamish about upgrading their Windows OS, because of course that can make or break you very quickly. I'm thinking when it comes down to it, some of the very obscure programs on iOS and Android have been some of our least adopted, but a lot of that just comes from the culture shift. You know, there's obviously Windows Phone is prevailing in our company, and mobile phones also too. We are starting to track that adoption, but through things like Hockey App, the adoption numbers get a little bit scattered. So. Yeah.
I guess the thing I would add on there is really that you know, there's two types. There's the Microsoft Elite program, which is an opt-in program for people to choose to run individual pieces. It's really kind of hard to segment early adopters in the SharePoint space. I just wanted to call that out. So some of our more critical users might say that we don't have early adopters. We inflict features on them, and then get their feedback.
You're not a volunteer.
Everyone's an early adopter.
I just wanted to kind of acknowledge the fact that, at least in the SharePoint space, the Office 365 SharePoint space, sometimes it's a matter of we light up a new feature, and we have you know, both the product team and our team on high alert, watching for that early feedback, and then we address it very quickly. So that's kind of our early adopter approach is that. Yeah. And then combine that with foreknowledge for the SharePoint users group that you mentioned earlier. We will... you know, for some features that can be flighted to a small group of users, we'll test out those features with our team, sometimes with individual partners. Mm-hmm. But most of it is just turning it on and seeing what happens.
Now, a little transparency, Microsoft IT has also been caught by some of our product groups releasing something, and we go, you did what? Mm-hmm. And I know video was one of those, it was a while ago. But they caught us by surprise back when video first came out in Office 365.
We knew it was coming. We didn't know when they were turning it on.
Exactly. So
one day it was there.
The one day it was there. And then it's like, oh, we have to support this now.
Great.
Okay, we'll take one last question before we start to wrap up. And we do have additional questions that we'll stay behind to answer. It seems that the number of Office 365 groups can grow to become unmanageable. Is there a plan to create organization around these for specific business units and potentially roll up data information across multiple groups for reporting?
That is a beautiful set of feedback that helps my conversations with the groups team, because those are exactly things that we're asking about as well. I will say, though, that groups being unmanageable, we will have lifecycle in place. And so, number one, we know that there are active groups. You know, and when we think about what you have today, you have DLs, you have security groups, you have SharePoint sites. The nice thing about the group construct is it brings those things together. I no longer have a separate security group from my DL, from my SharePoint site, from my now team, or from my mailbox and calendar. Everything is one space, effectively, one group to work within. And so I think from a manageability and controls perspective, we're actually really excited about that, how it fits together. And the fact that in the end, there'll be less objects across the enterprise. You almost think of it as saying, you know what, maybe there's more objects as groups than you have in other areas, but you have less overall because you no longer have a duplication of all these different artifacts and different workloads. It's now one thing, effectively. Mm-hmm. So that combined with lifecycle management to go, do I have an active owner of this group? Do I know if this group is actually still needed, or should it be expired? Those are all things that you'll be able to get to manage the group. Now, do I think the question I heard around, can I put an organizational unit effectively on top of a groups and say, you know what, I want to segment this division's groups from this division's groups? That capability does not exist yet. I think that's fantastic feedback, and we'll definitely be taking that forward too.
Okay. We are near the end of our hour, and I do want to ask our SMEs one final question, and that is, what is the one tip you want to leave our customers with today? And we'll start with you, Sam.
Yeah, let me see. This is one I was thinking about, and I think part of it's due to the Kool-Aid I've been drinking from the training I went to just yesterday. My tip, my feedback would be, take some time. Go learn Power Apps. Go learn Flow. The amount of power that's being delivered in that space, even if you don't feel it's right for your organization yet, what's coming and what you can do in those applications, I'll say it. It's amazing. It's one of the things that's got me most excited about the product here going forward. And I would recommend that you take a few minutes out of your day to go and explore and learn and write your own first flow and give it a whirl.
And like Sam, I think, I may be drinking the Kool-Aid as well, but I will talk about groups for a minute. I mentioned in my last question, the fact that I can bring these things together as an enterprise. I think there's an incredible value for IT to start to think about this holistically, but it does mean a change in IT that, historically in IT, that you have workload silos, you have the Exchange silo, separate from the SharePoint silo, separate from your directory silo, where you manage your DLs and security groups. Well, the silos start to get rationalized with groups, because at the end of the day, I'm creating a group that crosses the silos and it spans and creates one thing for all these different workloads. And that does require some advanced thinking and planning on the IT side around how do you work together as your IT organization. If you've got different teams within IT managing those different workloads independently, how do you start to have a conversation of these things fitting together at the end of the day? And also assess, where do you see the value in that? I mean, I clearly, from our perspective, we see value massively in what groups is going to do for us. But I think you have to decide from your own enterprise, take a look, evaluate, and understand the cross IT implications of what a group means.
For me, I probably drank a different Kool-Aid than you guys did, because I went over to Jeffrey Snover's office and drank his Kool-Aid. And that's to learn PowerShell. PowerShell is driving both the on-prem SharePoint world, the SharePoint Online world, Office 365 in general, Azure, and even Dynamics 365. If you are going forward into this modern age with these modern systems and you don't know PowerShell, you're really hamstringing your career by not embracing that. Spend some time. There are some great PowerShell resources out there, including some books where you can do PowerShell in 30 days over lunch. So you can take your lunch hour and learn some new PowerShell things. There's plenty of information on Channel 9 in the Microsoft Virtual Academy, and even from IT Showcase on how we use PowerShell. I know Darren does a lot of his job through PowerShell. So PowerShell is going to be critical now and going forward.
Man, how to top that one. I would also suggest that you learn the Graph API. That's my tip. The Graph API has done wonders for us. I do use a lot of PowerShell when it came to our automation. And we still do a lot of one-offs, a lot of investigations, auditing, forensics. PowerShell has been the glue. Graph API has been great for leveraging when it comes to licensing automation, making sort of automated changes. One, the performance of Graph is superb. We're able to process 280,000 licensing changes within a day, as opposed to back when we were doing it strictly with PowerShell, it was up to 7 days. So the Graph API is definitely worth digging into, tearing apart, learning it, figuring out how it works, play with it, because it is really where we're going to start going with administrative interfaces and automation and being able to integrate it into your applications. And yeah, definitely Graph API, I guess that's the Kool-Aid I drank.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow, lots of Kool-Aid here today.
Oh, yeah.
I do want to thank our SMEs for taking time away from your day jobs to come here and talk to our customers. It's truly very important. And I want to thank our customers for joining us here today. We love the opportunity to come answer your questions and engage in the dialogue on Microsoft's technologies. This video will be posted on our Microsoft.com/ITShowcase. We do have additional questions, so we will stay behind and continue answering questions, and you can find the answers in the extended footage for this video. There is a wealth of other resources there, technical case studies, business case studies, videos. How we do IT is all documented there. We do have live events like this weekly. Please join us again and bring your friends. Thank you, and have a great day. Welcome back. This is the extended footage of our earlier SME roundtable. We're going to finish up the rest of the questions. For Power App and Flow, if you watch to see what happens, do you have a plan B if it fails?
I guess we can take a look at that from a couple different areas. If you're talking about the actual applications or flows failing, plan B would be to possibly move to technology, or I could see flows moving into Azure Logic Apps, and Power Apps could be rebuilt as Xamarin mobile apps, potentially.
This is if you've implemented the technology and it's not working.
And it's not working right. I could see us doing that. Technically, though, Microsoft IT does not have a plan B. These are the technologies that we're using and we're pushing forward with them and provided them to our users and the employees of Microsoft.
And really importantly, we talked about this at Ignite as well, that with Power Apps in particular, that is our story for when you want to build a simple form, you'll use Power Apps. You won't use InfoPath to build a form, for example. So it is how we're building applications. It's how we are then embedding those applications in SharePoint, because again, SharePoint sites will have the ability to embed a Power App directly within it. So you'll be able to have your business process right there with the rest of a SharePoint environment. So I think that's actually the nice thing about where these things are fitting from that perspective.
Yep.
And I'll add on the flow model going forward. It's really going to replace the SharePoint workflow. This is something that has a lot of the capabilities of SharePoint workflow already built in and has the side benefit of being cross-platform. You know, imagine kicking off a workflow that starts in Yammer or starts in Twitter, you know, and populates a list that then takes some action. I mean, I guess, you know, we don't really see it as a plan B, and there's a significant organization here at Microsoft dedicated to building this out and making it a success. So I don't see that there is a plan B here.
Technically, the only plan B that I could see for either of those products is for Flow, and that is Azure Logic Apps, which can actually take Flow as a starting point and export it as a JSON file and import it into a Logic App, and you have an app that's up and running.
Flow on steroids.
It is. It is Flow on steroids. Flow, you're restricted to 2,000 flow executions per month per user. Azure Logic Apps, you pay for every execution, but you pay microtransactions. So I think that same level is about $10 a month. And you can actually run more than 2,000 times per user.
Right.
So
hopefully that answered it.
Hope that gets it.
Okay, very good. Next question. Can we have a link to these adoption guides? I'm not finding it easily on the site. Yes. We will post the link to two adoption suites, the Windows 10 adoption suite and the Office 2016 adoption suite, the full-on suite of content that we use to drive adoption within Microsoft for those two. We'll also post a link to our productivity guides that across all of the technology that we run on how we get our employees up to speed very quickly on the technologies. We'll make sure we post a link with this video to those three things.
Now, Sherry, those productivity guides, those are in Word format, am I correct?
Yes, so, and PDF.
So people could modify it for their specific business if needed.
We highly encourage you to take these guides, rebrand them if you like, and pass them out in your organization. So yes, Jared, thank you for asking that. Next question. Where can I find more information about running reports against lists that we've built within Office 365 or on-prem, or even the Azure model that was just discussed?
When we talk about reports, I'll take this. If we're talking about reports against the data in the list, especially in Office 365, Power BI has become an incredible resource to be able to visualize a lot of that data and do some reporting. You can even use Power BI with an on-prem farm. You just have to have the gateway configured. There are a personal gateway. I highly discourage that with people because IT organizations will probably become unglued if they hear of a personal gateway. But work with your IT organization and get a organizational gateway set up. And then everybody in the organization can use Power BI from the on-prem environment.
In addition, you can use the CSUM and REST API to access that list from your Azure application and do whatever integration or UI roll-ups you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And then I would add on, since we're not sure exactly what the question's addressing, so hopefully one of these gets it. You know, if you're looking for reporting on usage, you can, of course, get that from protection.office.com, you know, the audit log. Or if you want another way to access it, in the beta version of the Graph API, graph.microsoft.io is where you can learn more. Then you can access list items through the beta version of the Graph API. So there's all kinds of ways to get at a list in slice and dice, and hopefully one of those answers
Here's
the question.
Three.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, very good. Okay, this is a long one. We are not a technology company. We have created five sites types via on-premises web apps to make it easy for our business to use a team site, MSBI site, project site, etc. We did it this way so that our businesses can get work done without having to figure out the complexity of SharePoint. We have governance associated with each of these on-premises site types. With the advent of Office 365 groups, teams, and SharePoint Online, how have you at Microsoft guided your business people to use the right collaboration tool? Will Microsoft be creating any guidance for enterprises to move from a multi-web app on-premises environment as described to Office 365?
So yeah, I think breaking that question down, there's a part of it of what tool for what task, and absolutely Microsoft is coming up with better guidance around that when you use team sites versus groups, legacy, for example, versus current. OneDrive versus Teams. I think we're going to have better guidance around recommendations for that. I think the other big thing here is the dynamic of how do you organize your SharePoint structure. And I think one of the things that I talk about, because I have the same conversation with orgs internally as well, that at the end of the day now we want to say, look, you have a group now for the group of people that are working on something, that may be a project or a series of projects, however you want to structure it. But the group is basically, for all intents and purposes, of a security boundary. One of the things we saw historically, the challenge of SharePoint, as people that didn't necessarily get, especially with a large website with the structure, is the inheritance model and getting permissions right at each stage. And one of the things that we're encouraging is create a group for that team boundary, for that team work group to collaborate. They've got a space for everything they need to do their job in one site. But I think the key there is, as opposed to having one giant hierarchy effectively, we're moving at least internally to saying, you know what, have one group per, have one, therefore one SharePoint site collection per project per team, whatever that boundary is, and let that be. And in the end, we can then do governance controls on top of that to make that work. So I think that's generally our thinking around that one. We still have a notion of divisional portal, kind of keeping that independent from that story. Still have a place I can go get the divisional information or the publishing information the division wants to put out separately from the various group sites that that has. Now, to the question around the, how can I find and how do we simplify it for the employee, this is where things, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, Verdell, for example, in the Office Graph kick in to say, I'm going to show you what is relevant to you, and therefore I can see right on my Dell and SharePoint Home homepage the sites that are for me, the sites that have content that are trending around me, where my peers are actively working on.
Yeah, absolutely. That I think you're referring to SharePoint Home in this case, which is going to show you not only the documents that are shown in Delve that people in your network being defined both by explicit users that are maybe reporting to the same boss, but also by implicit users, the people that you actually trade emails with or have meetings with and that sort of thing. And so in the new SharePoint Home construct, you have this notion of not just what documents are they using, but what sites are they using. So that kind of surfaces that. Now, there's one question I want to ask back to you, David, because I heard a question in there that I'm not sure if the user intended. It sounds like they've come up with some templates for their sites, so that way there's consistency for certain tasks. I'll ask this as a question, even though I know the answer. Do we do anything with site templates internally so that orgs or teams can have a consistent look and feel?
So for what I'll call for classic team sites on 365, where it's a team site where the master page UI, the ability to customize it completely, we do. And so a division that wants to say, I want to have consistency across my sites, I want to have consistent content type across my sites, so for there are various libraries that are pre-configured, for example, we create basically design packages. So as opposed to a template, kind of legacy on-prem template model, have a design package which applies on top of it. And there's a lot of patterns and practices around how to apply on top of SharePoint UI changes that don't break the product, that work well, especially if going forward approaches too. So that's kind of what we've done for those divisions that want that divisional consistency across multiple site collections. Now, I'll caveat this and say, I can't say that today for groups, because a modern group is not using the same customization model yet. And they're not yet. They'll have a different customization model. So the how will I do get the divisional consistency will be a different story for groups over time. Mm-hmm. But team sites as they exist, I have a divisional story now that I can do on 365 without doing a nesting, because I think the nesting is in a giant site hierarchy are exactly what we like to get away from. Because while I totally get that companies may have a very rigorous hierarchy and management control, that can also get very out of hand. And we've seen firsthand on our side when. If we don't have the boundary being someone that has accountability, and the site collection owner for us has to have that accountability, if it's not at the project level, then that we can get, I guess, runaway SharePoint. You can get to a state that you can say, this site collection is now hundreds of thousands of subsites. Who owns what? And bringing that back and managing it can be tough. So I'm not saying that isn't doable. It is. In some cases, you might want that hierarchy, but we're taking the other approach where we strongly are going towards groups and a model that, you know what, we're much more distributed about that, so we can hold the owner accountable.
Now, in terms of adding, if you want to have that consistency of look and feel and whatnot, while that's not yet available in groups and in modern team sites, that is something the product group is tracking. They know that we want it and they know other customers want it, so the fact that you can't do that is not something that I think will be forever.
Will there be any new releases for SharePoint 2016, or is the focus solely on SharePoint Online moving forward?
I can take that. The short answer is yes, there will be future releases for SharePoint 2016 on-prem. They'll be calling them feature packs. So they're a little different than the traditional service pack that you know and love, hopefully love. They'll include not only fixes and hot fixes, security fixes, they'll also include new features, features that start in Office 365, but will start to make their way through those feature packs into SharePoint 2016. And I believe we were talking about this earlier, but one of the packs should already be live today for SharePoint 2016. Yeah.
And if you look at the Office blogs, there's more information about the feature pack that was released, and I know about the plan. But the product group has already publicly said, look, on-prem is absolutely, we're committed to it. We're committed to hybrid, to making that work.
Although cloud is where things will come first.
Yeah, cloud's first.
How about non-digital records management in the online version?
I think this could be trying to do some sort of card catalog of, you have some non-digital assets, boxes of data, possibly project files or records. I'm guessing possibly something with either legal or government type ramifications where
government.
You have to retain. And in the online world, I guess you can still utilize just lists to be able to point to it. You might even be able to start building things like Power Apps where someone could point a camera, because one of the great things about Power Apps is you can use phone capabilities. You could point the camera at the box, scan it, and say, oh, this information's in that box. Great, this is the one I was looking for.
And when you think about it, we do this at Microsoft. I mean, we have MS Library.
Yes.
We manage physical books as a card catalog. People can find out how many are in inventory, take one out, put one on hold, find out when things need to be returned to inventory. I know that MS Library also is trying to bring, you know, the digital copies as well through some of our publishing partners. But yeah, we do a lot of physical asset management through MS Library as well. And I know does MS Library use a lot of content BigQuery? I know they have a lot of customizations to make that happen. I know it wasn't something the product inherently specialized in.
Exactly. One of the big things they did is they have their card catalog system is a third-party application, but they were able to create a connector to move a lot of that content into the search. And so people can actually search for books in the SharePoint search, if you will, and be able to, as you're looking up the any sort of subject matter, you'll also find books that are available in the library that you can check out or even download because the e-copies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if there's any direct plans to bring some of that third-party functionality in that allows us to facilitate physical asset management, but we know it is out there.
And you can there's a lot of third-party solutions that can do it, or you can build your own type of solutions in SharePoint easily.
Okay, final question. Archiving for government organizations, any solutions to automatically get the documents offline and retained? And retain them without third-party solutions?
I think when I think about this one, it's kind of like what we do with tape drive backups in our SQL databases. So we have a bunch of digital or legal documents that are in SharePoint. How do we get them off to archive them? And one of the ways that we do manage that is through taking the SQL backups and either migrating them to an archival drive or migrating them over to a tape drive. I know with SharePoint Online, we have a 10-year document retention. There is no way inherently in the product to, of course, bring that offline. But there are third-party tools out there, partners that would allow you to create proprietary backup files or extract that over to a file store or an Azure Blob cache.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of third parties that do cloud backup solutions for your 365 subscription.
Yeah.
Yes. And also the other thing I want to note is you also have Record Center as part of this in your portfolio as well for online asset management from the perspective of I want to put retention controls in place and treat these as real records and therefore be able to do all the classification. To that, the Record Center capabilities that were on-prem are totally available in Office 365 as well.
I think that covers it, yeah.
All right.
I would probably say if you absolutely had to didn't want to use a third party, there are ways in PowerShell to automate that sort of move, but that's a pretty rigorous and not very
messy.
Very messy system.
Not user friendly at all.
Nope.
Opposite of user friendly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's doable.
But it's doable. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can do it. You can do it.
Okay, thank you guys. This concludes the extended portion of the SME Roundtable. Thank you.